everyone, and welcome to Minute 121 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Travis Bowe of the recently released Minute of Thieves. Welcome back to the show, Travis, this season.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you back also. So actually, why don't we start off by you telling everyone what's your background with this movie?
I think I saw this in theater with my folks. I want to say we were traveling. I think we were in Arizona, and it was just a oppressively hot day or something, and we wanted to get out of the heat, went to see a movie, which is something we never did when we were on vacations. Like, the idea of, like, going to see a movie while on vacation just seemed so weird. I don't know why. It's like, you can do this at home. Why would you do this, you know?
Like, if you go on vacation, you know, would you go see a movie? And you'd be like, hey, that makes sense.
I think it would be in my head, like that's weird, you know, or doing some types of events like that seem weird. I remember some friends coming into town and then going to like a concert venue. And I was like, that's weird. You know, I don't know why. It's just like,
okay,
certain things seem like, well, you do this at home, you do this at, you know, on vacation. I don't know why, but at the time, yeah. Cause I was, what was this? 98. So I was, 13, 15, 15. You know, so, but yeah, saw it in theater. From the get-go was overwhelmed by the movie like you're supposed to be. And it's one I've revisited, you know, a good handful of times over the years. It is a solid movie.
Okay. And how was it to rewatch it now? Did you remember everything about it, or were you surprised by things? You know, I don't know when the last time was that you saw it before this time.
Hmm. So I actually watched it last year. I had done
nothing like preparing.
I had come off of a big marathon, Godzilla series, like entire series, you know, franchise watch. And after I finished all the Godzilla stuff, I was like, I need like a palate cleanser. You know, I need something kind of just it's not monster related. So I ended up doing like some historical epics, like a kind of a mini marathon of historical epics, you know. So I did Braveheart, Gladiator, this, maybe Titanic, just kind of some, you know, stuff that I'd seen before but hadn't revisited in a while, probably because of, you know, they're long movies or, you know, but very well-made movies, but just not, you know, stuff you want to sit down and watch, you know, mm-hmm. often. So I think this was in that kind of group of movies that I watched. So I'd seen it, like I said, about a year ago, in that viewing, and then just watched it again a couple days ago, in preparation for this. So,
all right.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed watching this movie, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, we're going to get a lot of music this week, but, you know, music and stories.
Yeah.
All right. So Minute 121 begins with a panning shot while the music continues to play and ends with Upham continuing to try to explain the song. We ended things on Friday with, we had Miller and Ryan trying to you know, listen to the song that was being played, and then, you know, the shot changed and we had this panning shot, and then the shot then shows us a group of the other soldiers that are all sitting and waiting around. We have Mike, and we have Ryben and Mellish and Upham. They're all sitting around also listening to music. Now, there's something I never noticed till right now, when I was doing the research for this, is that this is not the same song that Miller and Ryan were listening to. Miller and Ryan were listening to one song, and this is a second song, both by Edith Piaf. Okay. Now, the funny thing is, I mean, if you look on IMDb, this movie only has three songs listed on the soundtrack. Okay, it's these two songs, and you know, the song that we use for the introduction and outro of this you know, Solitude by Duke Ellington. So it's interesting that you know, that you have these two songs that sort of mesh together, I guess you can sort of say.
Well, and it tracks that the one was probably just a previous, you know, like on the same record. Right. It's just, you know, just came before, sure. You know, and it's not an instant cut from one scene to another when the music would be the same song would be in both scenes. It makes sense that it'd be a different track.
Yeah, so. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know if these two songs are on the same track, you know, from that.
Sure.
I mean, I know when they both were recorded, and, you know, I have information about both songs because, you know, I will go a little bit into the two songs because last week we only talked about Edith. We didn't really talk about the songs very much because I wanted to wait till we got to Upham, you know, trying to explain the songs a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the two songs are It Was a Love Story, which is the one that was last week, which my French is terrible, so it's not going to help if I try to pronounce it. It's C'était une histoire d'amour. Okay. And then this song, the one we're hearing here, is Tu es pour tout, which means we loved each other dearly. So, I mean, we'll go through the lyrics shortly. But, sure. You know, first let's, you know, continue with these guys just sitting there, just listening to the music, which it's, we talked a little bit about this last week also. It's very interesting that, you know, these characters are just trying to figure out what to do in this downtime.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know how long the downtime is, but, you know, they're sitting and waiting for the Germans to come and attack, basically.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they show us some very strange things. I mean, I don't know if you noticed this during the panning shot, right before they start showing the men, you see that something is burning. Maybe it's a tank, or maybe it's a...
Yeah, just kind of down that alleyway. Yeah.
It's like, you know, no one is trying to even put that out. Maybe because it's a little chilly and they want a little bit of warmth part of the time. I don't know. And
that's funny. Yeah, like I noticed it, but I didn't like it. Didn't
it? Didn't faze, you know. It doesn't faze you. You don't. It should you pan right by it.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
There's a fire going in the middle of a war zone. No problem. But then you look at the way these guys are sitting on this stoop, and it does not look like they're sitting in the middle of France. They could be sitting in the middle of Brooklyn.
Well, I definitely noticed, like, when for this minute when it starts, you know, you're just kind of looking at the tops of you know, a church building, probably, I don't know, but these old kind of ruined buildings and this like very gray sky, and it pans like you said, and that's like I get this real strong sense that all of that is like green screen, you know, and then it pans into this stoop area that's, you know, probably just a set piece constructed for this set that they're on here. But like I noticed that sort of green screeny, very fuzzy, you know, kind of quality that it has, but it doesn't bother me that they kind of do that for some of these exteriors in this movie. Like it never strikes me as like, oh, that looks bad, or it you know, it almost just has a, I feel like I'm watching something old, you know, and that is appropriate. Like,
well, that's what they're trying to do.
Exactly. I feel like, so it's not a knock against it, where I feel like I can notice sort of that quality, but it's kind of adds to it.
And I also love the way that You know, again, you have three guys that are sitting on the stoop and one guy standing on the side next to them, and then next to him, you actually can see that there's a phonograph. You know, they found something intact in this town. You know, with as you said, a probably one record from Edith Piaf that they can, you know, they have two songs, one on each side that they keep flipping back and forth. I don't know. Because I mean, later in the week we'll get the impression that they are listening to the song over and over. By some of the
Oh,
comments
sure. Probably
some
restarting
of the
it.
comments that you know that are made. And so while they're just sitting there listening to this music, and for us listening to it also, it's also giving us somewhat of a, I guess, calm before the storm type of thing. Also allowing us to get to know these characters a little better also. Just and for them to get to know each other also a little better. And Upham just starts trying to he just translates to everybody. And he goes, "Even life itself only represents you. Sometimes I dream that I'm in your arms." And then Mike says to him, "What was that part? She sang that before." And he goes, "The chorus. It's the chorus." "Oh, the chorus." Which it's just really funny that, you know, it makes it seem as if Mike is a guy who has no idea what a song, how you use a chorus in music and stuff like that. And stuff like that. So, you know, there's another name for a chorus. It's also known as the refrain, which basically comes from the Latin word refringere, which means to repeat. And you know, the whole idea basically is that the chorus of the song is the stanza or the area that you just can repeat over and over at certain stages of the song. They
Is that the chorus the same as a hook?
I don't know what a hook is, so I couldn't tell you. What's a hook?
Oh, well, the brings you around according to Blue Straggler.
Okay. I'm not that familiar with that. Sorry. No, the idea of a chorus is that every other stanza or whatever it is goes back and repeats the same thing over and over. You know, maybe trying to make you feel that part of it even more. You know, it's like dig in.
And then it may have started, I don't know when that sort of thing was developed with music, but it was also probably like, let's make this song last a little bit
Right.
longer, so we'll repeat some parts and.
Right, that's true also. Right. I mean, also you have songs that the refrain is or the chorus is slightly different each time. You know, like maybe the last few words will be different or the first words and things like that. So yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. So the okay, here's an example from Yellow Submarine, right? So we have throughout the course of the song, we all live in a yellow submarine. It just keeps coming up. Also the song the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. You know, that also it's something that's repeated throughout the song. You can also go back to Who Could Ask for Anything More? That's I'm trying to remember what that one's what that's Gershwin, right? It's
I can hear
Gershwin,
it
I
in my
think.
head.
It's
Is it?
Gershwin. Who can ask for anything more? I got rhythm, I got them. Right.
Oh,
That's
okay.
you know that, again, I'm not a singer, which is why I talk about movies and not songs. So you know, not really gonna be able to so yeah. That's more or less what the idea of a chorus is. And so at this point, Upham says, "Yeah, the chorus." And he goes, and he continues to translate. And he goes, "And you speak softly in my ear, and you say things that make my eyes close, and I find that marvelous." And Mellish looks at him and goes, "I know." He goes, "Again, Upham?" He goes, "Yes. To be honest with you, I find myself curiously aroused by you." Well, they all start cracking up about that. And Upham then goes, "Marvelous." you know, repeating that final.
I like that little callback. That's right. The lyric. Yeah.
And then he tries to explain it a little bit. He goes, "No, it's really a melancholy song." And then he goes, "At the beginning of the song, she says," and then he gets cut off while he's trying to explain that. But it says something about Upham that he's able to have that callback. Because he's throughout the movie, you can tell that he is somewhat. I don't know if socially awkward is the right phrase, but he's not on the same level as everybody else.
I definitely think it's the right phrase. You know, yeah, he is a fish out of water with this, you know, this crew. You know, and he tries to tell them like, oh, he's writing a book about the bond of brotherhood, and it's like the guys that he's with in this movie, they all have a brotherhood, and they don't understand. Like, it's so natural for them to like have fallen in with each other that it's weird. Upham is weird to them because he's trying to analyze that connection and that sort of thing. Whereas to these guys, it's just a natural thing. It's a bond of, you know, that they've, because they've been together for, you know, however long. But watching this, you know, this time around, like I've always felt bad for Jeremy Davies as Upham, you know, with what happens kind of at the end of this battle with his character. I don't know that America has ever forgiven Upham and therefore really embraced Jeremy Davies.
Do you think this role has affected him for the last 27 years?
I do.
Wow.
I kind of do. Yeah. Yeah. Because I think he's a solid actor. I just don't think
he did kill Tom Hanks. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I feel bad for the guy every time I watch this movie, you know, because I've like what the character does is unforgivable.
Yeah.
You know, but then I do kind of think that he's like, I think it's kind of stained his career.
That is so fascinating. I never thought about it from that perspective. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. I'll just read through the lyrics of this particular song. So it's the full lyrics, not the way that Upham translates it, because the full translation is slightly different. So it's, "We loved each other dearly, as all lovers love each other. And then one day you left me. Since then, I have been desperate. I see you everywhere in the sky. I see you everywhere on earth. You are my joy and my sunshine, my night, my days, my clear dawns. You are everywhere because you are in my heart. You are everywhere because you are my happiness. All the things that are around me, even life, only represents you. Sometimes I dream that I'm in your arms, and in your ear you speak to me softly. You say things that make you close your eyes, and I find it wonderful. Maybe one day you will come back. I know my heart will wait for you. You won't be able to forget the days we spent. My eyes search for you constantly. Listen carefully to my heart calling you. We can love each other so well. You will see life will be beautiful. You are everywhere because you are in my heart. You are everywhere because you are my happiness. All the things that are around me, even life, only represents you. Sometimes I dream that you're in my arms, and in your ear you speak to me softly. You say things that make you close your eyes, and I find that wonderful." Okay, so the end is basically the area, the part that Upham is translating for them, and that is the chorus at the end,
right?
Where it's slightly different, but you know, where he uses the word marvelous. So the translation that I have here is that you find it wonderful.
Yeah, I like that. Marvelous.
Obviously,
better,
it works better with the dialogue for them to add that in there.
Yeah.
So they need that. And just to quickly go through the other song that we heard at the end of last week. So that song was a love story. "It was like a beautiful day of celebration, full of sun and taverns, where springs courted me. But when the stories are too pretty, it can't last forever. It was a love story, my part of joy, my part of dream. It had to end to make me heartbroken. And too bad if my nights are sleepless. Too bad for me if I cry all the time. It's sorrow that takes its revenge. Only sorrow is happy. There's really something to laugh about. I feel like I want to die. It was a love story. It was like a beautiful day of celebration, full of sun and taverns, where spring courted me. But when the stories are too pretty, it can't last forever. It was a love story, of which nothing now remains. Someone always has to cry. To make a love story, someone always has to cry. It was a love story. So, you know, and that makes sense with the way that Miller was explaining to Ryan about, you know, the idea of her missing her lover, you know, that type of thing. But like I said, to me, both songs sound exactly the same. You know.
Yeah. From what little I looked up Edith Piaf, like a lot of her stuff was kind of this melancholy love story, mm-hmm. love song kind of stuff. So,
yeah. That's pretty much all I have actually to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to mention?
I noticed like when they're just kind of casually sitting there all taking in the song and the translation, Horvath, Tom Sizemore's character, is just holding holding his handgun out. Like, I never noticed it before, and it's, I don't know, like, I've just inherited a gun. My father-in-law just passed away, and I received one of his guns. It's a Walther PPK, because he and I both shared a love of James Bond. So he wanted me to have that. So like to see him just kind of like hearing the music and just kind of like, you know, motioning with it with his hand, just letting it, you know, sort of sway to the beat of the song. It just struck me this time as like. Like now, like I said, now that I have one, I did not grow up in a gun culture, gun household. My dad had some, and I would go shooting with him occasionally. But like, so my relationship with guns is just like, you know, only firing them like at targets, you know, at a gun range or at some property where, you know, it's suitable to do that sort of thing. You know, I didn't grow up in a hunting culture. So it's like now owning one, it's weird because when I, you know, received it and the only time I've handled it, like, you know, I took it out of its case. I made sure it was unloaded, which it already was, you know, and then I put a lock, you know, in through the action so that it can't just be, you know, taken out of the case and fired. Like it has a lock on it with a key that's, you know. You know, not in the same case, you know, it's well removed. So like, to me, like to just casually hold a gun feels so weird. Like it just to have one in your hands feels like I'm always hyper aware of like, okay, I cradle this thing, you know, I don't like, you know, I never hold it, you know, unless, you know, I don't know. It just different perspective now, I guess. So it's just funny to see him kind of just very casually just kind of hold this gun.
Funny that you mentioned it because I didn't notice that he was playing with the gun. But the idea is that the last time that we saw him have this gun was when he was threatening to shoot Ryben, you know, a few weeks ago.
Oh, and yeah.
Here the two of them are buddy-buddy. Yeah. You know?
Right. Now they've, kind of patched things up, it seems like, or just – and I think they both know, like – when you're in these situations, like it might get heated one minute, but the next minute it's like, hey, let's just move on. And you know, we're not going to stay angry at each other when there's a job to do, you know, I guess. They may not like each other, but they could still sit on a stoop together and listen to music and you know.
Maybe the music has just made them together, you know, become friendlier, you know, listening to Edith.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, I did look up you mentioned the phonograph. I think I looked up like what, like is a gramophone the same as a record player? Which basically the same, but a gramophone works off of like it's a mechanical process, the wind up sort of thing. A record player requires electricity. So that's just the difference there. A phonograph is the one that Thomas Edison invented that has like the wax cylinders. So yeah, this is a gramophone, and it's based on what I could like find, just like looking it up, just visually, not really having anything to kind of go off other than just what it looks like. I think I narrowed it down that it's an HMV number 2. And according to the gramophoneguru.com, the gramophone company was for a few years, the gramophone and typewriter company. And it was under this name that they produced the model number 2, made famous forever by being the one with a Jack Russell looking into it. The original design used a brass horn. The company quickly found that brass was not the ideal material for making horns out of. One got a better sound quality out of painted tin plate or, best of all, wood. They also discovered that the typewriter side of their business was not doing very well, so they dropped them and reverted to the gramophone company. It was about then that an artist called Francis Barraud tried to sell them a somewhat maudlin picture of a dog sitting on a coffin listening to an Edison phonograph. With typical Victorian sentimentality, it was titled His Master's Voice. The master in question, presumably being in the coffin, you know, although his voice lived on through the through the player. The company agreed to buy the painting as long as Barraud substituted their latest model for the Edison machine. And then within a few years, the gramophone company started trading under the name His Master's Voice and developed the Monarch gramophone, you know, into – I think stateside I read that company would be the Victrola company. So the HMV number 2 stands for His Master's Voice. So
that's really cool. So, yeah. Well, thank you very much for figuring that out.
Yeah. The only other thing I looked up for this minute was at the tail end of the minute when it kind of changes from that front on view of the men all sitting around. You see the license plate of that little half track bike.
The rabbit.
Did you look at? Yeah, the rabbit. Yeah. Did you look up any of that?
I didn't. I figured I wasn't gonna find the license plate.
I found what I suspect is that the production for this film, they probably went out to someone who restored this thing, you know, and that's the actual license plate. Cause I found plenty of pictures. I just searched that license plate number and found that bike or, you know, whatever that, with that plate. So I think it's probably one that someone, restored, and then, you know, I doubt they changed the license plate number for production, but it's a half track motorcycle called a Klein's Kettenkraftrad, or shortened to a Kettenkrad, and it was used by the military of Nazi Germany during Second World War. Of course, it was mostly used in the Russian, North African and Western Front theaters of war. So it's, I didn't go any further than that, but you know, it's a pretty cool little thing that, you know, we'll see in action later on in the movie.
And it makes sense that it's sitting right next to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause they're going to have to get into action with it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Now, the thing is that if you watch the pan that they did at the beginning of the minute, you don't see it there. It's not there. So I'm trying to figure out how that got there. Yeah, it's definitely not there.
It must. Yeah, I don't know. Like if it's from angle, it wouldn't be right there. But maybe when this shot changes and you see it, like, and it's in the foreground, maybe it's not really that close to them, but the shot makes it look like it is because that license plate is like very close to the camera, right in front of them. But yeah, it's probably just a perspective thing.
We'll watch for that over the next few days, see if we can find
that. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. So every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guest will give their top five John Williams movie theme slash scores. So Travis, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if this was overall, entire albums, my top five albums or my top five tracks. So
Okay.
I did both.
Basically, I'm looking for your favorite tracks. But it could be overall
Sure.
movies too, whatever you prefer.
Sure. And so I'm, for background's sake, like I love film scores. I listen to more film scores than I do radio. I mean, I don't listen to radio, like unless I'm just in a car for a short trip and I don't feel like plugging in my phone or whatever. So most of what I listen to are film scores, and then or podcasts, or occasionally actual,
Right.
other music like band music. But yeah, John Williams is definitely up there, as one of my favorite composers. But my top five would be five, like for whole albums, would be Jurassic Park, then Raiders of the Lost Ark, then Revenge of the Sith. Number two would be Empire Strikes Back, and number one is Star Wars. And then to get a little more granular, top five tracks out of all, and not necessarily from those five albums, because I've got Across the Stars, which is the love theme
Right.
from Attack of the Clones, is one of my favorites of his. Buckbeak's Flight from Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, when he's like riding that, Battle of the Heroes from Revenge of the Sith, Journey to the Island from Jurassic Park, and what I now refer to as Staring at the French Horn from Star Wars. If your listeners listen to Star Wars Minute, that's when Luke is staring off into the Twin Suns, in Star Wars. So that's my number one. But
No, that's not that one. No, I know which one it is, though. I just, yes. Yeah, that is a great list. I mean, that's one of the problems with these top fives this entire season. Every one of them, they're just really, really difficult to nail down specifics.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so much good,
No,
John
there's so
Williams
much
stuff, like
great. There's so
Yoda's
much great
theme,
stuff. That's, yeah, understandable. Right. I'm actually surprised that you don't have Superman on your list.
It's good, it's great. Is it my part of my top five? No,
apparently not.
yeah, I like what. I mean, it's probably blasphemous to say, I like what Hans Zimmer did for Superman music more than I like what
Oh,
John Williams
blasphemous,
did. So
blasphemous. All
I know, yeah.
right. So, Travis, would you like to tell people where they can find Travis Bow?
Yeah, so like you said up top, very recently, I just started releasing Minute of Thieves, which is the podcast I've been working on for like 2 years now. It's my, it's my Movies by Minutes project on Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. So that is now available. You can just search Minute of Thieves. Should be pretty easy to find, but yeah, that's one place you can hear me.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. You can find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this.
In my solitude, you.